The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
Here's Bill Meyer.
10 minutes after 6, it is Pebble in Your Shoe Tuesday. Le Pebble in Le Shoe. Yeah, as you can tell, I did not train in French. I think when I was in Paris back in 2007, the best I could do was croak out, ibuprofen, s'il vous plaît. You know, that kind of thing. That was about the extent of my French, but they appreciated me trying, at least, if nothing else. I hope you're doing well, though. It's 11 minutes after 6, but with Pebble in Your Shoe Tuesday is a public service day in which if there's something which is just really of concern to you, rather than you going out and getting to the point where you want to do violence upon people because you were so angry and frustrated about it, you call the show and we talk about it and you feel better. It's just really amazing how this works. I don't think I've ever had anybody calling up so angry that they were ready to do violence. But, you know, if you were, hey, that will be the public service, okay? 770-563-3, 770-KMED. My email is Bill at BillMyersShow.com. Got some great emails in overnight that I'm going to have to share with you. I might be a little bit sleepy, maybe taking me a few minutes to kind of get going this morning. I want to apologize. Had an off-air alarm station went off because of a tripped circuit breaker at 3 in the morning. I love that. Circuit breakers never go off at 3 in the afternoon. They always break at 3 in the morning when you have a morning guy who's also the engineer. So not that I'm trying to explain for my incompetence, but, you know, we're pre-explained. But if there's a little bit of that, just understand. Oh, that's right. He was awakened early. And he didn't get his beauty sleep. And, of course, if you're looking at me on Facebook, you know the beauty sleep has never taken. Anyway, it is Pebble in Your Shoe Tuesday. Hey, first off, a great story. It's great to hear about something in which everything ended up working out okay. They had a fire yesterday morning on Oakdale, South Oakdale, at about 3 in the morning is one that that broke out in a multifamily dwelling of some sort. And smoke alarm ended up waking up the occupants. And apparently what happened is that there was a burned-up ventilation fan or a ventilation fan was failing, and then it ended up setting the house on fire. And they knocked it down, and mother gets out. Two young kids from the upstairs also get out there. Everyone's okay. And that's an example of, you know, when it comes right down to it, everybody talks about, you know, fire departments and, gosh, we have to have great fire departments, et cetera, and we do. But I would dare say that when it comes to the actual loss of life, that having good smoke detectors, fire detectors, and alarms like that, and just the change in building codes over the years have probably done more to save lives and just stop the spread of fire. There's certain examples of where the regulatory state has actually done some good. And I think when it comes to smoke alarms, things like that, pretty good deal. But family's okay. So some good news. And then there's Jeff Merkley, Senator Jeff Merkley, and Senator Ron Wyden. That's all I'm going to say. I know people get upset sometimes when I do anything else when it comes to Ron Wyden. But this is a press release that I got from Ron Wyden and Jeff Merkley yesterday. And it makes me wonder if they just kind of figure out that people don't really understand money or large numbers, or even how small some large numbers are in comparison to how large some of the other numbers that they put out might be. And here's the example. This is how you're supposed to feel really good about your senators, because they're bringing home the bacon, the pork. Merkley and Wyden announce over $1.8 million investment in Oregon manufacturing. You're thinking, wow, $1.8 million. $1.8 million headed to the Oregon Manufacturing Extension Partnership, the OMEP, to bolster Oregon manufacturers. This funding will provide all public-private partnerships to small and medium manufacturers across the state. In other words, it's a, kind of the manufacturer grift, the small business grift kind of thing going on here. But still, first off, I don't know why this is something that should take a grant from the federal government. It would seem to me that the state government would be quite capable of doing such grants, because the state would seem to have more of an interest than the federal government. But, you know, this is the way it is. This is the United States, the massive United States. That's the pebble in my shoe this morning. But Merkley, this is what Merkley says. If we don't make things in America, we won't have a middle class in America. And when Oregon's manufacturing industry does well, all Oregonians benefit, said Merkley. Unless you were trying to manufacture it using wood. Or actually going out there and manufacturing timber, you know, lumber from timber. You know, that's bad manufacturing. That's left kind of unsaid for Merkley. Meanwhile, Wyden says the manufacturing that generates good-paying jobs throughout Oregon doesn't happen by osmosis. It requires smart and targeted investments just like this. There is nothing about the federal government putting $1.8 million of grant stream funding, which is ever smart or targeted. It just goes to reward political friends. Just remember that. See, that's the pebble in my shoe this morning to get started. And also, when it comes right down to it, $1.8 million... I'm sure that they put the release out there so that Channel 5 and Channel 12 and everybody else would just kind of uncritically report it. Ooh, $1.8 million for manufacturing. $1.8 million doesn't even quite match the value of a crap shack above the boulevard in Ashland. Just one crap shack above the boulevard in Ashland is probably $1.8 million or more. You know, you're up in the hills or something like that. And the house is in bad shape. It's probably $1.8 million. So the equivalent of one crap shack in Ashland is now going to spur the manufacturing of the entire state. But you see, there's an example in which people, I don't think, quite get that. Ooh, $1.8 million. That's a rounding error. It's almost not even worth mentioning. But I'm mentioning it because Merkley and Wyden are making such a big deal about it. And just understand when you hear these stories that it's just going to grant stream funding to reward probably some left-wing political friends of one sort or another under the guise of manufacturing. And it would probably be manufacturing like the Makers Movement. The Makers Movement, which is about us all going communist and being in our climate-friendly, equitable community. And then, you know, it will be just like the communist Chinese in the back in the 1960s during the Cultural Revolution or something, which everything, we're going to be making everything out of the backyard of our home. We'll be making steel. Weren't they making steel or iron? They were smelting iron in the backyards of some of the Chinese folks because they had to find some way to industrialize and they just couldn't do enough of it. That's the future under the gangrene New Deal and, of course, Merkley and Wyden. We'll probably just go get your grant stream funding. So there we go. That's my my pebble in my shoe this morning. And I can almost always count on a Congress critter or a senatorial critter to bring it my way. It's 18 minutes after 6. And we'll continue here with some other headlines here in news. This is the Bill Myers Show on KMED, 99.3 KBXG. And how are you doing so far? Got a pebble? Let me know. 770-5633.
Power outages are beginning.
Hi, I'm Jim with the Beauty Mark Salon and Glitter Bar, and I'm on KMED.
20 minutes after 6 on Pebble in Your Shoe Tuesday. Ron's in Grants Pass. Ron, I don't know if you have a pebble or you just wanted to call with your normal stuff, but let me know.
Well, I do have kind of a pebble, but it has to do with Ron Wyden and Merkley, so-called dedicating X number of millions of dollars, which are practically nothing.
Yeah, well, $1.8 million is what it is, and they're making a big deal about it, but this is what you do, and it's trying to fool the rubes into thinking, well, they really care about manufacturing as they keep resources locked away from the people, of course, but, you know, still.
Yeah. Well, in Riddle, we used to have a chrome plant, I believe, that used to dig chrome. And then up in the county office and other places that they have closed off to people going and dredging gold and silver and other things. It seems like all of our lands and resources have been subordinated to the debt that we have accumulated to China and to other nations of the world who have bought our debt instruments like securities and so on.
Well, it is interesting that there has been such a locking away of resource land in the state of Oregon, almost as if the people who are involved, I know that's kind of a conspiracy theory Thursday, that will keep the people away from digging for gold or logging timber, because it's much more spiritually positive to burn the forest. You know, that's the best way of dealing with that. But you have to wonder, what you're actually thinking, that they're just keeping us in reserve for the eventual Chinese takeover. Is that kind of it?
Well, worse than that, they're preventing us from using it, creating jobs, which is what they came to do with that $1.8 million. Ha-ha.
Uh-huh.
So the way I look at it, these guys are really frauds, and they're trying to control us some more by saying, well, here's a grain of sand out of the bag of mud that I brought back with me.
That is a, you know something? I'm going to give you a real American salute on that, because you're seeing through the fraud. Thank you. That is real. You get a real American salute, Ron, in Grants Pass.
Well, you're doing good. Keep it up.
Okay. Thank you. It's
all
a mutual right. admiration society. Okay. All right. 770-5633. It is a Pebble in Your Shoe Tuesday. Other news. Boy, it's looking kind of weird. I've been keeping up on this story. Nick Morgan in the Rogue Valley Times has an article this morning that a federal judge last week, denied Jackson County's objections and wholly affirmed an earlier judge's findings in a civil rights suit that was filed by a paraplegic man, claims he was mistreated in our county jail. And Michael Machane's September 18th opinion clears the case filed by John Lee Mallaire for a trial. So this is going to go to trial, in which jurors, among other disputed facts, will decide whether a corrections deputy slap, there was a slap against the guy, the paraplegic, caught on camera, stemmed from a policy or informal custom. Blair claimed in his suit first filed in early 2020 that he was separated from medication and catheters needed to treat his neurogenic bladder condition. Medford police arrested him in July of 2019, claims that caused him at the jail to urinate on himself and his bedding, and that being without a wheelchair for roughly 5 hours left him severely dehydrated. And their claim is, with no access to the faucet, Mallaire claims he was forced to drink water from the toilet. Forced to drink water from the toilet for 5 hours? That sounds a little off to me. I mean, I've been thirsty in my life. I don't know if I've been thirsty after 5 hours being in a room that I had to go and drink the toilet. Well, I guess this is going to be up to the jurors to find out how much the taxpayers will be screwed over in some legal settlement. I don't know. So county defendants, including Brian Kokomo, claimed that the open-handed slap in the clothing exchange room was a diversionary strike. Oh, is that what it's called? I remember that next time Linda mouths off at me. You know, it'd be a diversionary strike. No, I'm just kidding. I'm being totally sarcastic, okay? Diversionary strikes, but I don't know. Sometimes, anytime you're dealing about jail situations, I'm amazed we find anybody that's even willing to do those kind of things, because you're working with some of the least likable people under the worst circumstances possible, and I'm not surprised. I'm surprised that more doesn't happen in these kind of lawsuits. But, I'll be curious to see what the jury has to say about this. And everyone's going for the money. Going for the bucks, I guess. We'll see. 25 minutes after 6. This is the Bill Myers Show. Back to the phones, because it is Pebble in Your Shoe Tuesday. Good morning. Hi, who's this?
Good morning. This is Ron Smith, Grants Pass.
Ron Smith, how you doing? Running for Josephine County Commission, right?
Yeah, I want to talk about this whole notion of nonpartisan politics.
Okay. Now that you're talking about a really good laugh, you're giving me a good laugh this time of day.
Well, that's a laugh to me.
Ron, the only thing that is nonpartisan about politics is how well you hide your partisanship. That's all there is to it. Okay? That's all it is.
Exactly. But you know, the left wants to yell nonpartisan, but they're so partisan it's pathetic. It's a laugh, isn't it, Bill?
That is just wild. And by the way, how's the campaign going at this point for you?
It's going good. You know, I'm working against the guy that's endorsed by the Democratic Party.
Oh, okay. Well, but that's not partisan, right?
Oh, no, that's not partisan. See, I'm endorsed by the Republican Party. That's not partisan.
Yeah, see, Ron, this is why I've thought that this whole concept of nonpartisan positions, period, in elections are just absolutely stupid, because everybody is some kind of partisan or is coming from some sort of ideological thing. And look at what they're doing. I mean, they were trying to go with nonpartisan races here in Jackson County. I said, no, don't do it, because look at what's happening in Josephine County. Everyone's sitting around there tap dancing and lying about their nonpartisanship aspect. And I will be here to support all the people. Yes, me, a conservative. I will be out there and ready to impose the communistic agenda. Or just like, and then the communists are saying in there, of course we'll be out there and helping out the rock-ribbed conservatives get their way, you know?
Oh, yeah. It's like you can please all the people all the time. I mean, I don't understand that kind of logic. There's no way in the world you can please everybody all the time.
All right. And for that note here, another Real American Salute, Ron Smith.
So. You have a great day being nonpartisan, Bill.
Okay, absolutely. I'm being nonpartisan. Now, the thing is, though, I think it is much more honest just to say, okay, we all have a point of view. We all have partisanship. And can we be fair and listen to the other side and take good ideas when we hear them? How about that? Would that be all
sure,
right?
I can, but there's certain things. There's certain things that you cannot compromise your principles on. It's like I'm endorsed by the Oregon Right to Life. Now, how am I going to get along with these guys who are pro-abortion? I don't understand how I'm going to please them.
Well, you have to understand that you are dealing with a certain percentage of people in which the most important, this is like the life, it's kind of ironic, it's a life-affirming concept for many Democrats to kill unborn children. So I don't know where this is, but apparently that is, you know, the number one thing. And I'm sure that they're probably smearing you right now for even saying that you are endorsed by Right to Life, which means that you're going to be imposing a Handmaid's Tale in Josephine County if you are then elected as county commission, right?
Yeah.
I didn't mean to give your opponents ideas. I was just having it. But you know how that ends up going. It's like, yep, we know that the Josephine County Commission will end up banning abortion.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Okay.
It's crazy, Bill. It's like, you know, this gender dystopia they're trying to put down our kids' throats. I mean, how am I supposed to, as somebody who believes in protecting children, how am I supposed to go along with something like that?
You can't really.
So it's nonpartisan, Bill. Nonpartisan.
Nonpartisan is presented somehow as being good and pure. No, you're doing is hiding points of view. That's all it is.
And it happens a lot here in Josephine County, because they know that they cannot get a commissioner elected. So they end up just being spoilers.
Yeah.
So you have a rhino running and a true conservative. They always throw their votes to the rhino.
Yeah, but it is quite interesting that you see the rhinos get together in their own little separate group from the conservative Republicans. And they're, it's interesting to see the little the voting get-togethers. I've noticed some of that going on in Choke County. It's quite funny.
Well, now I see that there's some Republicans joining with the Democrats, and I'm going, were they ever really conservative?
Does make you wonder, but that is a challenge of the Republican Party in Oregon, in that it is not a particularly conservative group overall.
No, it's not. But, you know, it's all nonpartisan, Bill. You know, you got to remember that.
Nonpartisan is good. Okay, repeat after me. Nonpartisan is good. Nonpartisan is good and pure. Kind of like the voices of the angels. You can see. Okay, I can't do this. All right, enough. Thanks, Ron.
Well, have a good day, Bill.
Remember,
it's all about nonpartisanship.
All right. And the incredibly nonpartisan, I don't know if he's nonpartisan or not, but Steve Gorham's going to join me here in just a few minutes, because you'll be happy to know that this week is Climate Week over in New York City. Climate Week. Is it Climate Week? I want to make sure I get that right. Let me look up my, I know I've got it here, you know, in my notes someplace. Gosh darn, where is it? Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. I had it in there. Oh, yeah, it's Climate Week, New York City. Yeah, they're urging world efforts to fight global warming. And all we have to do is send lots of money to government people in the form of taxes and carbon fees, and we'll change the climate, apparently. Steve Gorham, who's written a number of books on these subjects, says that the renewable energy push is actually failing even right now. Okay, I'll talk with him about that and more. It's all coming up on Pebble in Your Shoe Tuesday. I know he has a big one, and we'll talk about it next. Hi, this is Bill Meyer, and I'm with Charisse from No Wires Now, your Dish Premier local retailer. It's time to switch to Dish.
If you proper after planting care.
Talk to the Rogue Gardener Saturdays 10 to noon. Hear the Sunday morning encore at 9 on KMED.
You're hearing the Bill Meyer Show on 106.3 KMED.
6:37. Steve Gorham is executive director of the Climate Science Coalition of America, and he's written a number of books on energy and climate change, sustainable development. Has over 100,000 of them in print right now. His latest book, Green Breakdown, The Coming Renewable Energy Failure, came out August of last year. Steve, it is great to have you back on the program. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Bill. Great to join you again.
Now then, wanted to get in touch with you because it's a very exciting week here, and it's a climate week in New York City, from what I understand. And something tells me that this is, by the way, are you attending in New York City this week, or are you covering it from afar?
I'm not.
You're not?
I'm doing it from afar.
Oh no. I'm so sorry to hear this. I was hoping that you were going to be with the United Nations and the Al Gore shrimp fests and things like that. And so that way you could, get right into the belly of that beast and find out how sending government people more money and destroying our industrial capacity will change the weather. I was hoping.
Yeah, I'm saving carbon dioxide emissions by not going. So,
oh, good for you. All right. But why don't you tell us a little bit about what this is actually? What is the whole gist of what they're doing in New York City this week? Is this like planning NGO takeovers in the future? I mean, what is the plan at this point as we see it?
Well, there's a whole bunch of events. The theme is it's time, and they're trying to get the world caught up because the world is falling behind on the climate goals. It also coincides with meetings at the United Nations, so they're going to have a bunch of international heads of state there. I think President Biden is going to go and speak for a little while today, and they're trying to urge the world to get to net zero, to get rid of coal, oil, natural gas, and to put in wind, solar, and biofuels. And they realize things are falling behind, and they're really falling behind by a lot. If you look over the last, about the last 30 or 40 years, global energy use is up 47%, and the International Energy Agency and the climate conveners want energy use to drop by 2050. There's no sign that's going to happen. Emissions are up since year 2000 by 44%, and the International Energy Agency wants those to drop by 40% by 2050. But we are using more coal, we're using more petroleum globally, and that's mostly going on in the developing nations, not so much in the United States. So
it's interesting. Yeah. What you're telling me, though, telling us, is that the rise in so-called emissions, carbon dioxide emissions, which they're trying to conflate with pollution, not that big of a deal, but why is the United States then looked at as at the key people who have to be deindustrialized, and you better be taking the bus? And if you do have a vehicle, it has to be a very expensive electric vehicle, or otherwise, no personal transportation for you. Why is such a focus being put on the United States, given that we're not really the problem in the grand scheme of things?
Well, part of it's being driven by our governments, our state and our federal governments as well. And matter of fact, even the wealthy nations of the world are driving this. The United States, Canada, Europe, Australia, New Zealand, and a few others are pushing this net zero policy and trying to impose these things on our people, while China and India and Southeast Asia and many areas are growing, and in many cases, as they should. We have former Vice President Al Gore has said we ought to have no more coal-fired power plants anywhere in the world. We ought to get rid of all of them. But there are 6,500 of them around the world right now and another 1,000 in planning. Yet we have a shortage of electricity globally. We have about 700 million people that don't even have any electricity. We have another 2 billion that have blackouts and brownouts every single day. In the United States, we have about one car for every person. In Europe, it's about one for every two people. But it's about one for every 20 in many poor nations. We use about 15 or 20 times as much plastic as the rest of the world. So as the world develops, we're going to see more and more usage of all these materials that make life better and boost incomes, despite what we're trying to do here in the United States with electric cars and a lot of other things.
Steve, is the goal to actually keep these developing nations from developing? Is there a case to be made for that, or are they only going to be able to develop with one hand tied behind their back, so to speak?
Yeah, there is a lot of push for that. The United Nations and others are telling developing nations you ought to do wind, you ought to do solar, you shouldn't use coal, you shouldn't use gasoline and diesel vehicles. That is what is being handed out, and what they dangle, and the reason so many developing nations participate in the climate annual assemblies, the COP28 and whatever, is billions of dollars are being dangled in front of these nations, transfers from the United States and Europe and others, if they'll just be green from the start and not put in all these things which we know grow economies. Man, we've had some outstanding claims. India, 2 years ago, asked for a small sum. They wanted the world to transfer $1 trillion a year to them so that they could be net zero by 2060. I mean, these numbers are just astronomical, and they don't really make much economic sense anyway.
But maybe most of this really is about wealth transfers and destruction of the West in some ways. Would that be fair or not? I don't know if you get into that in the Green Breakdown book or not.
I don't go quite as far as saying it's a deliberate destruction of the West. Certainly it is a big wealth transfer thing. The United Nations also has had the goals of being environmental leader and also putting world government in place, which has been another goal, along with the wealth transfer over many years. And I think a lot of the people are true believers in this. They think the world is in danger and we have to make these changes. Yet if you really look at the science, you find that nature controls global temperatures, nature controls the storms, not humans. And so despite the fact that we're spending trillions of dollars, we're not going to have a measurable effect on global temperatures. The only sensible reaction to the climate by nations is adaptation, to build seawalls, to put in air conditioning, to do other things to make lives better if it warms, not to think we can control global temperatures.
Well, there's a fight now to stop the making of air conditioners, too, because no matter what happens, no matter how clean or how effective the refrigerant may be in a refrigerator or a air conditioning unit, it's never good enough, is it? Isn't it? Have you noticed how they're always changing the formula every few years?
Yeah, the federal government keeps imposing requirements on efficiency and a lot of other things, which effectively, if meant to go forward, will ban certain things. The recent EPA regulations on automobiles are an example. They had carbon dioxide emissions requirements. Trying to impose those on auto manufacturers, the House of Representatives just voted a memorandum against that, and so we'll see what happens with this. But yeah, there's and you know, we're getting to a position where maybe people won't be able to afford to run their air conditioners. California is getting to be that case. If electricity prices have gotten so high in California, if you run your air conditioner during the August or July months, you get an electric bill that's about $1,000 for the month. I mean, it's completely out of hand, and it's going to go much, much higher. So one way or the other, citizens are suffering from the effects of all these green policies.
Steve, by the way, Steve Gorham, Executive Director of the Climate Science Coalition of America, and his latest book is Green Breakdown, The Coming Renewable Energy Failure. Which of the renewable energy forms is probably the least viable or the least viable in the long term as far as economic and its usefulness, because that's you know, truly what you have to look at it as cost, too, not just whether it works or not. What do you think?
Well, many of these things are big, big problems. If you look at there's a global index called the RENIX, R-E-N-I-X-X, the Renewable Energy Industrial Index of the top 30 renewable equipment companies in the world. It was established in 2006 by a German firm, and at that time it was established at about 1,000 points. Just last week, it was at 1,013. So in 18 years, it's been essentially flat. This stock index compared to the S&P 500, which has quadrupled over that same period. We have many industries which just don't make sense and can't break even. One of those is electric vehicle charging. There are no electric vehicle charging companies that are making money in the United States, and many of them are losing just huge amounts of money. ChargePoint, the world's largest dedicated EV charger company, last year lost $458 million on revenue of $507 million.
But are these just growing pains, though, when you say that you can't make any money doing electric car chargers, things like that, Steve? What would you say?
Well, you start to get a lot of, there's a lot of this going on, though. So Tesla is the one big example of success. Tesla was the only pure play electric vehicle company as late as 2018. And it grew bigger and was valued more than the other top six vehicle companies in the world.
But isn't it true that mostly Tesla became a play because it was the politically favored subsidy queen, or king, if you want to call it that?
Well, because they got a lot of subsidies, but they were very smart also. They did very high-end cars, expensive, okay, where the cost didn't matter too much, and they were a big hit. But since 2018, we've had 31 electric vehicle companies that have gone public, initial public offering, and today only one of those has a price that's higher than the IPO price. All these companies, Rivian and many others, Nikola, NIO, are down like 80-90%, and so 30 of the 31 companies have lost money. We have a whole bunch of other things. Offshore wind is another one that is really a problem.
And that's something that they're working on. There have been permitting process going on right now off the coast of Oregon, the BOEM situation that they're trying to get going in there. And it would be arguably pretty large. I guess we don't have enough dead whales off of the shore of Oregon, so we need to kill some. I think that is it just me, or does that seem to be happening? And the moment they put that up, all of a sudden your whales end up driving themselves into the beach. Is it just me, or is there something to that?
On the West Coast, I know it's happening on the East Coast. We're seeing quite a bit, and I think it's because maybe of this sonar where they are surveying the depths with sonar, and that affects the whales. But we're having a lot of them, more of them, washing up on the East Coast. But they're finding they're putting these big wind turbines offshore, and the failure rates are very high. The average turbine fails in about 5 years, and then they got to go out and fix these things. The other thing we have on the East Coast that you don't have on the West is all of these hurricanes. And hurricanes are really bad news for wind turbines. We had them destroy a whole bunch of them in Puerto Rico a few years ago. So they're going to go out and build all these wind turbines on the East Coast and wait till we get a big hurricane run through there. And I think a lot of these things, they're going to have – they think they already got a few shards on the Massachusetts beaches from breaking up wind turbines. Wait till you get a big storm come through. I mean, these things just are not sensible from a durability point of view, from a cost point of view, compared to traditional electricity sources.
The thing being, though, is that I think that there is room on the grid for a variety of power. And I have no problem with there being renewable energy on a grid. Nothing wrong with that. It's a matter of if it pencils. I'm not so convinced, though, that large-scale solar electric is the panacea that they're hoping, you know, to have these big, massive solar farms, because you still have the problem that when the sun goes down, it's not there. And so you almost have to build the grid twice, don't you, in essence, when you build them?
Yes, you do. You have to build two or three times as much transmission. One thing that most people don't realize is the amount of land area that wind and solar take up. Sometimes I ask audiences when I present, which is more environmentally friendly, a power source that produces one unit of electricity on one unit of land, or one that produces one unit of electricity on 100 units of land? And that's the situation with wind and solar. They take 100 times the land of a traditional nuclear, coal, or natural gas plant.
But arguably, the United States has a lot of open space, though, so maybe good for us? I don't know.
Well, you do, but then you got to build transmission out to all these things. You got to double or triple a transmission. And in California, for example, transmission is what is causing these forest ignitions. And so, they got a problem. You can't get house insurance out in California now. But, we're going to keep building more and more transmission to all these diverse solar plants. You got to put up 20 solar facilities for one nuclear plant. scatter them all over, build transmission to them. Very, very expensive, and then a fire hazard as well.
Steve Gorham with me this morning. You know, it's interesting you bring up the big solar plants, because I was a young DJ. I was talking about this yesterday, Steve. In 1980, I was in Barstow, California, and there was Solar One, the really first big solar plant. It wasn't even that big, really. I think it was like 5 or 6 megawatt hours. It wasn't that huge of a plant. But it was a kind of a proof of concept, and it worked pretty well. And they, you know, it's out of commission now. It was taken down a number of years ago, was upgraded. And I was then looking at a picture of the Crescent Dunes Solar Energy Project, which is supposedly like 110 megawatts, and yet it never generates 110 megawatts, and it went through bankruptcy and coming out. But yet I'm thinking, if you're going to do large-scale solar, those seem to be the more sensible ones, because they can store energy at night within their system and work 24/7. I mean, wouldn't that make more sense than to do the solar cell type deal?
Yeah, the concentrated ones have certain advantages, but then they're more expensive to deploy as well.
Oh,
and so you know it's kind of a mix. They get higher capacity factors, higher utilization, but they're more expensive to deploy. But now what governments are doing is they realize they have a problem, because solar and wind are intermittent. So they want to put in a whole bunch of grid scale batteries. California again is pushing this, these huge batteries that sit on the grid that charge when you got a lot of wind and solar, and then discharge when you don't have much wind and solar. But they're very, very expensive. According to the Renewable Energy Laboratory, to back up a single solar system, you need about 10 times the cost of grid-scale batteries.
Oh, my gosh. So in other words, if you have $1 billion in solar cells, then you need $10 billion in Tesla batteries, right?
And then, by the way, the batteries only last 10 or 12 years, and the solar lasts 20 or 25 years. So it's even worse than 10 to 1 cost. And then the last thing is, these things are burning up. I don't know if you caught the headlines on I-15. They had a truck with a grid-scale battery on it that caught fire out in the middle of the desert east of Los Angeles, and it blocked the interstate for 44 hours.
Yeah, let's put them by the forests. What could go wrong, Steve, right? What could go wrong? Okay. Oh, man. What of the renewable makes the most sense, though, truly? I mean, like I said, I thought Crescent Dunes could have been a great proof of concept. We already have lots of renewable energy when it comes to hydro, but that is politically unpopular right now. Free the rivers and have the magic fish return. Blow the dams up, you know, that kind of thing.
If you're in the south, of course, then solar is better, because you get more direct solar. If you're on Hawaii and you have no pipelines of any kind, and wind and solar can be pretty good.
Yeah, makes sense. Now, that makes sense there. They have nothing in Hawaii other than the breeze, really. They have no naturally.
There's a possibility for geothermal to improve and become a bigger share of energy. It's less than 1% of global electricity right now, but you know what they're doing now is they're using hydraulic fracturing to create geothermal fields. So that's a possibility. Although we got a lot of people that don't like fracking, so we'll see how that goes. But again, we should be doing our electricity sources based on cost, a real environmental benefit, a reliability, and not this idea that if we put in a lot of wind and solar, we will be able to stop the oceans from rising. That is modern superstition.
Do you have any hope that the grid-scale battery push that, like you had talked about, one caught on fire on the interstate in California a few weeks ago, is that ever going to get to the point where they will actually be cheap? Is there a different type of technology, perhaps, that is not involving the lithium ion or the lithium phosphate, you know, et cetera, to do that? Do you know?
Possibly. Batteries are going to get better and better, both for electric vehicles and for other things. The problem is they're a long, long, long way away from this. And for example, if you look at grid scale batteries globally, we only have about 8 watts out of every million, 8 watt hours out of every million watt hours today in the U.S. that goes through grid scale batteries. It's very, very tiny. It's going to be decades and decades and decades before this has any kind of really measurable effect. So we're going to have a mixed future of hydrocarbons and renewables. We're not going to get to net zero by 2050. And folks can read about it in my book, Green Breakdown, The Coming Renewable Energy Failure, which goes through all of this.
Does it break down financially first, or does it just break down because people reject it first? How do you see it playing out in the near future?
Well, it's a combination of things. I mean, this year we've hit a speed bump on electric vehicles, as you may know. What's going on in Europe is just horrendous. In Germany, EV sales are down 77% from last year, despite governments pushing it. In France, they're down 40%. We have a lot of problems with offshore wind on the East Coast. About half the projects are not making it. We have McKinsey, the consulting company, just did a recent survey and found that in the U.S., 46% of current EV owners say they're likely to go back to a gasoline car the next time around.
Oh, they don't want to read those kind of stories, do they?
So, I mean, these things are going to get better and better over time. But again, the idea that we can push these, everybody's got to be forced to switch to an EV or a electric heat pump at home so that we can save the climate. That's where we're really off base. Let's go back to market principles and low-cost energy for people.
Steve, when it comes right down to it, something which is really good doesn't need a government subsidy to come of age because, you know, it's just people just know it would work well for you. Is there going to be a push? Do you think we're going to be conditioned to be accepting of nuclear power once again after we were really conditioned back in the 1980s? Oh, you can't go here. Because it seems to me if you're really going down that gangrene world, you can't ignore the nuclear possibility, or can you?
Well, I can't remember what we talked about last time I was on with you, Bill, but we have a coming shortage in the next decade between what can be generated and the electricity that people are going to demand. And it's driven by green initiatives like switching to electric vehicles and heat pumps, but also this push for artificial intelligence. And right now we have big guys like Microsoft and Amazon and others that are building data centers next to nuclear plants so they can get enough electricity.
So
this is going to be a really big issue. At Oregon, you got similar things going on as well. And people don't realize it yet, but what's going to happen is they're going to stop shutting down coal and natural gas plants because we're not going to have enough power. They're going to be re-extending nuclear plants. The Three Mile Island plant in Pennsylvania, one of the two, not the one that melted a little bit.
Yeah, it's being restarted, isn't it?
It's being restarted, yeah, and that's because Microsoft is going to build data centers right next to it. They want the electricity. They're restarting a nuclear plant in Michigan as well, Palisades, Michigan, that was closed 2 years ago. So we're going to see a return. There's really no alternative if we want to get people to power. They can't do this on solar, just too weak and wind. So we're going to see some shifting and some big changes coming.
All right. Intermittent and chaotic power. It doesn't work for a 24/7 society, that is for sure. Steve Gorham, once again, Executive Director of the Climate Science Coalition of America. Numerous books in print that he has, more than 100,000 of them. But his latest is Green Breakdown, The Coming Renewable Energy Failure. And that is available. You can find out more about this. Steve Gorham, GOREHAM.com. You know, it's kind of ironic that you have Al Gore's name in the middle of your, in the beginning of your last name, huh?
Yeah. I had one radio guy say, Gorham, the antidote for Gore. So
I like that. I'm going to do that next time, Steve. SteveGorham.com.
Okay,
thank you so much. Good talk, as always. Okay.
Thanks, Bill. Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye now.